Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Ryan Callow, who is a professor of law at the University of Washington, whose research focuses on the intersection of law and emerging technology, with an emphasis on robotics and the Internet. His work on drones, driverless cars, privacy, and other topics has appeared in law reviews and major news outlets, including the New York Times, The Wall Street Journal, and NPR. He's a former research director at the Center for Internet and Society at Stanford University and has also testified before the full Senate Judiciary Committee on domestic use of drones. Welcome to Background Briefing, Ryan Callow.
Thanks for having me.
And today, FBI Director Robert Mueller testified before the same committee, the Senate Judiciary Committee, on the issue of drones. He was asked about whether they're being used domestically and said that they're, in answer to a question from Senator Grassley, he said that they're being used in a very limited way. Is that reassuring?
Well, it's unsurprising. Given the technical capabilities of drones and the low costs associated with operating them relative to manned aircraft, it is hardly surprising that the FBI would be using them domestically in some instances. The way that the FBI appears to be using drones for now is actually, I think, very positive. It's the idea of giving agents on the ground better situational awareness in a dangerous situation. The concern is whether they would start to use it in a more dragnet way. And in fact, there's really very little in privacy law that would prevent them from doing that.
So from what we know of the use of drones by the FBI, they used a drone in February, did they not, in a standoff with an Alabama man who had shot dead a school bus driver and then taken a five-year-old boy hostage?
That's my understanding as well. Again, this is a situation where having some eyes in the sky, so to speak, gives your agents better situational awareness. They understand better what's happening, and they can execute their strategy more efficiently, lowering risk to others and making sure that they cover their bases. And that's a positive use of the technology, I'd say. I think the concern that many have, including some members of the Judiciary Committee apparently, is that this will be used for more routine surveillance, just to sort of keep an eye on folks or to patrol a particular area or to look for particular transgressions, as opposed to in unique identifiable situations like the way that the FBI has used it so far.
So the main user that we know of is Homeland Security, right? They've been using drones on the border. But this is new, the testimony today from FBI Director Mueller, in terms of the FBI using it. I'll be saying it's a small footprint. What kind of footprint do we know that the Department of Homeland Security has?
Well, so, okay, the Department of Homeland Security has a fleet of military-grade drones. They're not armed, but they are essentially the same as the Predator B that you see in the theater of war. And they use that to patrol both borders of the United States. They also occasionally will lend out a drone to domestic law enforcement. And there have been instances where, say, a sheriff or law enforcement would say, you know, look, we really could use one of your border drones to check out a particular situation, and that's occurred. So their footprint is much greater than that of the FBI. And, in fact, the Department of Homeland Security has been, in ways, encouraging domestic law enforcement to explore drone technology to see whether it can be helpful to them in their mission of protecting folks and solving crimes. And so they've really been more of a facilitator of drone use as an organization than the FBI specifically.
So in the same hearing today where FBI Director Mueller said that there have been a use of domestic use of drones by the FBI, although he says that the footprint is very small, the chairwoman of the panel, Senator Dianne Feinstein, told the FBI director that she believes that unmanned planes, drones, are the biggest threat to Americans' privacy, especially their use by private firms. And, of course, we have learned from this NSA scandal involving the contractor Edward Snowden of the extraordinary growth of private contractors in intelligence, taking up something like 70% of the entire intelligence budget. So what do you make of Senator Feinstein's warnings?
Well, okay, so a couple different things. I mean, the senator is correct when she says that there is very little in the way of privacy law that stands in the way of domestic private parties like the press, including the paparazzi, but also private individuals, you know, using drones for a variety of purposes, right? Not much on privacy law is going to prevent that. However, the Federal Aviation Administration, which controls the, you know, the nation's airways, so far has not allowed private individuals to operate drones for commercial purposes and won't do so until September of 2015, at which time they're thinking about relaxing the current ban on private commercial use of domestic drones. At that time, I believe there will be a great proliferation of drones in the United States, some of which will be used in ways that are concerning to privacy. Others will be used in totally innocuous ways, for instance, agriculture. Or, you know, in the interim, I think we're going to see much more use of drones by the government, which we're already seeing today. And that, you know, in, at least in my own opinion, and I mean, I think that everyone is entitled to, to their views, but in my view, that is more concerning in, in the short term, that we'd be using them for law enforcement purposes, where the purposes are not just to get a better sense of what's going on in a particular hostage situation or to find a lost kid, but rather to engage in the kind of massive surveillance that folks are worried about the intelligence community engaging in today. And so, you know, who knows? How do you compare the threat to privacy from commercial use down the line to the current threat to privacy? It's a very difficult comparison to make. In many ways, it's apples and oranges. But the truth of the matter is that strengthening privacy law, both in the private and public sector, would be helpful, in both respects.
But, Ryan Callow, couldn't you make the argument that it's not apples or orange, it's apples and oranges? And doesn't this also apply to the current story about the NSA leaks from the private contractor Booz Allen Hamilton, the idea that you both have the government snooping on American citizens and the big internet monopolies like Google and Facebook building tremendous databases on individuals? You know, Google gives you free Gmail, but the price you pay for that is that if you send out an email saying you like strawberry jam, suddenly manufacturers of strawberry jam are flooding your inbox.
So let me say this. So it is certainly the case that private collection of data by companies reinforces the opportunities for government surveillance. Okay? And that happens in a lot of different ways. I mean, first of all, the thing that people are really worried about right now, and what is underlying a lot of the concerns around NSA surveillance, is a so-called third-party doctrine of the in the Fourth Amendment. And all that says, basically, is that when you commit something to a third party, like an internet company, for instance, then you essentially give up certain rights to it, or that's the argument, the position that the government takes, is that you give up a certain expectation of privacy with respect to that. So as we begin to store all of our stuff in the cloud and to email each other instead of talking in person, and of course for a long time now using the phone, we end up committing certain information to private entities, and that makes it easier for the government to get it, right? Now, that's a different situation in my view than the military-industrial relationship around surveillance. When a company acts on behalf of the United States, when we privatize surveillance, well, the Constitution is going to treat them, and most laws are going to treat them, as though they were the government. And so if we had private contracting drones flying around on behalf of the FBI, well, that would just be treated like the FBI. So I definitely agree that there's a very complicated relationship between, you know, industry and the internet industry and the government, and that in some ways it does make surveillance easier. But of course, it's fraught with tension. I mean, you see how Microsoft and Google very vocally recently and others are pushing back against surveillance. They're trying to get the right to talk about the deals that they have with the government. They're trying to talk about the requests they're getting for information. They're trying to push back in the courts against consumer data leaving their hands because, you know, their lifeblood is consumer trust. And so it really is a complicated relationship. I wouldn't say that it's all in any one direction.
And again, I speak with Ryan Callahoo, professor of law at the University of Washington, whose research focuses on the intersection of law and emerging technology. He's formerly research director at the Center for Internet and Society at Stanford University. He's testified before the full Senate Judiciary Committee on the domestic use of drones. Tell me about your recent testimony.
Well, the senators wanted to understand what legal restraints, if any, were already associated with the domestic use of drones. And my role there, as I understood it, was to talk about privacy law and where privacy law stands in the way of domestic use of drones and where it doesn't. And the gist of my remarks was that in most instances, privacy law doesn't have a lot to say about using drones here. And that has to do with the fact that you don't have a reasonable expectation of privacy in public, generally speaking, and that's where, or even anything visible from a public vantage. In other words, if the FBI were to fly over your backyard, that you probably would not be able to bring any kind of constitutional challenge for what they saw in your backyard, even though it's your own property. Now, that may be changing. After this case in the Supreme Court, United States v. Jones, where a majority of justices expressed concern over following folks around using GPS devices for long periods of time, you could imagine a case where drones followed someone around for a long time. You could see courts following Jones to an extent there, but it's not obvious because Jones involved physically attaching a GPS device to a car, whereas drones don't have to attach to anything. They can just follow you in the air. And so I saw my role in that particular testimony as just explaining legal context. I talked about the Fourth Amendment. I also talked about common law privacy torts, such as intrusion upon seclusion. And tort is where, you know, you sue another person for harm that doesn't come out of contract, mostly. And so I was explaining to them the sort of history of the privacy torts in the United States, and the senators were, I thought, very engaged and well-informed, and it was a productive discussion. Also there were, of course, representatives from law enforcement, from the unmanned aerial systems community, and also from the civil liberties side, from EPIC, which is a privacy organization in D.C.
So how much is the Fourth Amendment intruded on, though? If you've got a drone overhead, the idea that the Fourth Amendment says that the citizen should be secure in their person and their papers, obviously it's a different era that it was written in, but still, if you're at home, your person and your papers, aren't they? I mean, they can certainly look at you in your backyard, but they can also look at you through infrared inside your home. So it's an intrusion. So how does the 18th century intention deal with the 21st century reality?
Well, I mean, that is a very good question that a lot of us have been thinking about for some time. And so just on your point about looking into someone's house using, say, thermal imaging, we'll say the Supreme Court did actually look at that particular issue in Kylo, and Justice Scalia, writing for the majority of the Supreme Court, said you would, in fact, have a search in a situation where you're using a technology that's not generally available in public, to the public rather, and you're looking into the interior of the house. And so on those specific facts, you might not, closer question whether you happen to look into someone's window and see something. I mean, there was a case where this is manned flight, but I don't see why it wouldn't apply to drones as well, where officers, flew over a greenhouse, and there happened to be like a panel or two missing from a greenhouse, and looking through the greenhouse, they were able to spot marijuana plants. And so anything that's visible from a public advantage is by and large a fair game with a couple of possible exceptions. One other thing I worry about a lot is, there's this idea within Fourth Amendment law today that you don't have a reasonable expectation of privacy in something that's illegal, in contraband. And that's why, dogs can sniff your bag at the airport, because the idea is they only signal to the officer where you have something that you shouldn't have, and you have no expectation of privacy in contraband, something unlawful. Recently, the Supreme Court decided a case involving the dog sniffing of the home as opposed to using the, thermal imaging. And what the Supreme Court said was, bringing a dog onto the property for purposes of sniffing it, that is an intrusion and therefore triggers the Fourth Amendment. But it's not as though we couldn't put chemical sensors on drones. And so imagine imagine drones that just flew around looking for particular kinds of activities. That if they only alerted when there was unlawfulness that they saw, maybe they only alerted when they saw somebody with a gun who they don't think is licensed, or they only alerted when they came across an illegal compound or chemical like like marijuana, that feels like a pretty severe threat to civil liberties that may not register all that well on the Fourth Amendment. And so, as you say, the Fourth Amendment, it's certainly true that technology, surveillance technology, has far outpaced the changes in privacy law, and that we are at a situation where we need to correct against that disconnect.
Well, just in closing, Ryan Callow, we remember recently Senator Rand Paul conducting a filibuster where he was trying to extract a promise from President Obama that the use of drones in chasing terrorists abroad would not be used domestically and there would be no such thing as a drone strike against a U.S. citizen on American soil. And he got that note from Eric Holder saying that we wouldn't do it. And it felt a bit more like a stunt more than anything else. But was there any substance to that? Is there any, in other words, Eric Holder's assurance, how binding is that?
Well, so first of all, I have some fond memories of that filibuster because a senator read aloud from one of my essays. And so I paid more attention than I might have to the substance there. As to your question about Holder's letter, I'm not an expert in how the executive can bind itself, but what I understand the letter to be was an interpretation on the part of the Attorney General of what the Attorney General believed to be the executive powers in this instance. I think that there was a little bit of theater there, both on the part of the senator and on the part of the Attorney General. I think that if we ever were to use drones domestically to actually harm someone or kill them, that would run afoul of a lot of different kinds of laws, and we would see an enormous discussion erupt around that. I feel personally very assured that that will not happen. I don't believe that the United States government will ever use a drone. A military-style drone that's armed on American citizens on American soil. I just couldn't possibly see that happening, irrespective of the letter that went back and forth. I watched that with great interest, and it certainly did nothing for the image of drones, which we've tend to tie to the theater of war already, which is part of the reason that we're so skeptical about them.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Ryan Callow.
Thank you for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Ryan Callow, who's a professor of law at the University of Washington, whose research focuses on the intersection of law and emerging technology with an emphasis on robotics and the Internet. His work on drones, driverless cars, privacy, and other topics has appeared in law reviews and major news outlets, including the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, and NPR. He's a former research director at the Center for Internet and Society at Stanford University, and he's also testified before the full Senate Judiciary Committee on the domestic use of drones. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon and assistant producer Nick Garino. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. The headline.